Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:07 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is November 28th. Well, we saw a pretty positive day today on Wall Street, with the Dow, the S&P, the Nasdaq up in excess of 2%, the Nasdaq up almost 3%. Mexico's market was up almost three. Well, in fact, it was up 33%. The Brazilian market up 1.5%. Europe was more sedate. There wasn't much of a move on most of those markets, but we also have to bear in mind that Jay Powell's speech occurred after the close on in Europe. If we were to look at the futures markets, well, then we get a somewhat different story, where the majority of markets are trading up about 1% in the futures markets. Well, Jay Powell came out today and said that the Fed funds rate is pretty close to a neutral level. That's leaving them some leeway where they could potentially say that it's going to be one and done in December. But then the big question is, what are they going to do about the size of the balance sheet? Because what has characterized everything that's been going on this year has been that they have been concurrently reducing the size of the balance sheet and increasing the interest rate over the last 12 months. Well, that's something that has both increased the cost of capital and reduced supply. What they could potentially do is decide that they're going to leave interest rates on pause, but to continue to reduce the size of the balance sheet. I think that's perhaps one of the more likely scenarios. It's certainly something that the Federal Reserve wants to do, is to remove additional liquidity from the market. So, and most particularly, they would like to be able to run down their vast holdings of mortgage securities, which they haven't been particularly successful with so far, because there hasn't been the same number of prepayments on those mortgages that would have helped to bring down the total overall. But there are two things that people have been particularly worried about. One is the fact that global liquidity conditions have been contracting, and they've been led lower by the Fed's contraction of its balance sheet. And liquidity conditions are pretty much neutral right now, that that central banks on aggregate are no longer adding, well, when we look at the total, they are starting to contract. Well, if they continue, well, then the pace of the contraction is going to persist, and then that is going to have an impact on liquidity. And considering that this has been a liquidity-fueled bull market, well, then that is likely to be greeted with a great deal of uncertainty by investors. Anything that helps to ameliorate that situation is going to be greeted as a positive sign by investors. The S&P 500 is outperforming the Nasdaq right now. It has posted a higher reaction low in November relative to the low in October, and that was higher than the one in May, which was above the one in April, which was above the one in February. So now we have a sequence of higher major reaction lows on the S&P 500, and as long as that remains the case, well, we can I think conclude that this is a period of higher to lateral ranging. But what I think would really help to reconfirm that we are in a ranging phase rather than an evolving top phase, it would be if the index can sustain a move back above the trend mean. Well, if we see additional upside follow through tomorrow and on Friday, well, then that will help to improve the potential that that is in fact what we're getting. So, what happens over the balance of this week is going to be rather important, and but I think it is also worth considering that we are in the most favorable time of the year from a stock market perspective, that we are due a Santa Claus rally, that the most likely scenario is that, considering we have had a very oversold condition on a substantial number of shares, all resulting from the pullback in October, and with little evidence of a very clear rebound in November, that the balance of probabilities is that we're going to see a positive market outcome in December. But when we look at what's going on in the Nasdaq 100, Well, that's also something that's worth highlighting here, that it did put in a lower low in November. Now it is also rebounding here, and that it has yet to push back above the trend mean as well. But it's been a deeper pullback than we've seen on the S&P 500. Well, what that begins to suggest now is that the most likely scenario is that it's going to be the S&P 500 that leads on the upside, that the corrective phase that has I think begun with the mega cap technology sector is likely to roll on for a while longer, when we consider that shares like Apple and Facebook have pulled back in a very violent manner. It's going to take some time to really begin to repair some of the damage to confidence that has occurred in among the investor pool. Meanwhile, the kinds of shares that have been paying out better dividends, like Microsoft, for example, having bounced very emphatically from that psychological $100 area, those that have adopted a subscription business model and have profits rather than in increasing debts. Well, Adobe, for example, bouncing very emphatically from above that $200 level. But then the more conventional dividend aristocrat type companies like Coca-Cola, Yum Brands, McDonald's, these are among the shares that are at new all-time highs. So on the one hand, they are defensive. There is no question of that. And it is generally when we see that highly defensive sectors are exhibiting clear relative strength and an absolute performance. Well, that's generally an indication that we are late in the cycle. And I don't think there's any question of that. We are late in the cycle. But the much bigger question is whether we get an acceleration in some of these assets before we get a recessionary environment. What does look rather likely at this stage is that the 2-year yield looks likely to unwind its overextension relative to the trend mean. That would represent the potential for a further rally in asset prices. And there is, I think, at least some evidence starting to come through that we may be starting to move back into a risk-on environment. And considering the fact that it has been risk-off now for at least the last few months, I think that's a potentially positive development from the perspective of not just US investors, but global investors. And then when we think about what's going on in terms of some of the performances we're seeing in some of the most oversold markets, well, Tencent has now broken its sequence of lower rally highs, and that sequence has been going on since January. So it's at least unwinding the oversold condition relative to the trend mean. And considering just how much the share has pulled back, it is due a bounce in here. Well, it's probably going to take some time, and we're probably going to see some pause in consolidation once it has unwound that oversold condition. But I think there is an increasing likelihood that it has potentially bottomed, and that we're probably due at least a ranging phase and potentially even a retest of that low. But that it's I think there's an odds-on possibility that we've seen the low in Tencent at this stage. Well, Alibaba is unwinding its oversold condition relative to the trend mean, and it obviously has work to do if it's going to push back above it, but at least we're seeing some steadying here in some of these Chinese assets. Well, the Hang Seng has been pricing in the potential for a pause in the Fed's interest rate hiking cycle, and it was in additional positive territory in here today. The A-share index was up approximately 1%, and is also steadying now from above that October low around the 2600 point level. Well, it does certainly need to push back above the 2800 point level and push up into that overhead trading range, and most particularly back above the trend mean to really confirm that we're back in a demand dominated environment. But 2500 points is the upper side of the almost 3-year base formation that persisted between 2012 and 2014. So it's a natural area where people might begin to ask questions about whether value has returned to the market. And I've continued to think that the banking sector in China is a state-sponsored recovery potential here. It's the one sector where we have clear evidence of a sequence of higher reaction lows and very modest advances, which suggests that the Chinese administration are coming in and supporting the market whenever it pulls back. Well, if we are back on a risk-on footing, then the commodity complex has been rather volatile, and copper in particular has this triangular pattern, which is very evident on the weekly chart. So if it can push back above the trend mean, then I think we are on for a pretty impressive rally in here. On the other hand, if it breaks its sequence of lower rally highs, well, we could be in for an equally impressive decline. That's the nature of these, the narrowing of the trading band is representative of the imbalance between supply and demand becoming progressively narrow and narrower, and that eventually when that changes, then you can get an explosive move. And I suspect that that is what we are looking at potentially here with the copper price. So it's certainly something to keep in mind. And when we look at the LME Metals Index, it was right back on its lows in here yesterday. Well, it's updated with a one-day lag. It's probably going to be bouncing in here tomorrow. Well, nickel prices have been unrelentingly weak over the course of the last 6 months, and they were in very mildly positive territory in here today. But this is the industrial metal now with the clearest oversold condition, and therefore it has the potential to bounce in here if we get some the pressuring of the short positions. Then when perhaps we look at some of the other industrial resources, lead prices have been pulling back as well, and they're pretty much on their lows. You can see clearly on the 10-year chart that $2,500 has been an area of resistance. Well, it's obviously going to have to break that sequence of lower rally highs to really question the downward bias. Then tin prices have been largely range bound and are also back testing the lower side of their range. So what we can see clearly from looking at a number of these industrial resources is that in fact copper prices have been exhibiting relative strength, and it's quite likely that if copper prices can break higher, then it's likely to take some of these other industrial resources with it. Palladium also had a very firm day in here today, and it was up $38. So that's pushing on to a new closing high. And when we look at the consistency of this trend, well, it had pulled back very aggressively in the pullback that we saw from the beginning of this year, but found support around that $800 area, which had been an area of resistance between 2011 and 2017. And now it's pushing on to new high ground. Well, a sustained move below the trend mean would now be required to question potential for additional upside. There are estimates that platinum will remain in a supply surplus next year, but it'll be a narrower one than we've seen this year, and the price was off its lows in here today. And gold prices were somewhat firmer in here, up about $6. Well, the dollar was a little weaker in here today, and what we've seen now is that this was a downside key reversal. We saw an upside key reversal 6 sessions ago. So now the question is whether that 96 point level is going to hold on the dollar index. The euro, having got all the way down to test just about that 112 area, posted an upside Q reversal today. So upside follow through tomorrow would, I think, begin to signal that the sequence of lower rally highs from September is going to be challenged. The pound, which has been very weak over the course of the last five or six sessions, has at least steadied from the 128 area. And my contention for quite some time has been that it's more likely than not that the UK would negotiate a deal with the EU, but that it would be rather difficult to get it through Parliament. And that's exactly what we've seen. Well, now that it's going to be very difficult to get through Parliament, I think that there isn't enough of credence given to the possibility that there is going to be a second referendum. There is the alternative possibility that that there is going to be a Norway plus type of scenario where the UK joins the EEA, or that the UK is going to remain closer in terms of a customs union. Well, in all three of those potential scenarios, the UK is going to remain closer to the EU than people really thought they were voting for when they voted to leave the EU back in 2016. I think the potential for a hard Brexit, despite the fact that there are what I suppose could be considered a minority of MPs would back that potential outcome. Well, it's unlikely that other MPs are going to back it, considering that the head of the Bank of England is saying that it would result in the pound dropping below parity with the US dollar. So that would be a 28% decline from here. In fact, it would be more than that. Then you would have the potential of an 8% contraction in the economy. Well, certainly people are going to be regarding that as scaremongering, and they'll be pointing to the fact that the UK's economy has been relatively resilient in the face of Brexit. But Brexit hasn't happened yet. I think that's one point. There is the other additional point that the depreciation of the pound immediately after the vote was an insulating fact for the UK economy. So it would require an additional devaluation, and particularly an extraordinarily large one, in order to insulate the economy from the deflationary forces of a very hard exit from the EU. And that is, I think, such a large dislocation that policymakers are unlikely to vote for it. That doesn't mean that individuals might not vote for it, but politicians are, above all else, are really focused on getting re-elected. And they would probably be questioning whether that could be possible if they contribute to an economic contraction of the size that the Bank of England is predicting. Even if it is a doom and gloom kind of prognostication, it is likely to have an influence on sentiment. So that suggests to me that the UK is probably going to end up closer to the EU. My personal views don't particularly matter. I think, one of the other points, that if I had been given a vote, I would have voted to leave the EU, like I suspect many of the of our subscribers would have. But that is quite beside the point of what is most likely to occur as a result of people who voted to stay in negotiating any deal that is to be agreed. Now, when we look at some of the emerging markets, they tend to be rather sensitive to the dollar's weakness. So a little bit of weakness in the dollar is contributing to some strength for South African assets. The rand has steadied up in here, but perhaps more particularly when we look at some of these ETFs, the Brazilian ETF is firming from the region of the trend mean, and that's on a dollar basis. The Mexico ETF is looking really very oversold, but it was off its lows in here today. And then when we look at the South African ETF, what we've been presented with over the course of this year has been an unrelenting sequence of lower rally highs, but it may now be in the process of breaking that sequence of lower rally highs. Well, one of the other major factors that we've seen in markets over the course of the last few months has been some really quite acute stress coming into the credit markets. And I've highlighted the yield on the GE 5% perpetual on a number of occasions. It was at 20% last week. It's at 15.96% in here this week. Well, when people look at the equity, what they're primarily concerned with is that the price is accelerating lower and how low is it going to go. But when people buy the credit, what they're really concerned about is whether the company is going to default. And quite what the price is largely irrelevant. It really depends on what the price is when you buy it, and what the potential then is for default is what is going to dictate what the total return is. Well, prices are very low, and GE is, I think, unlikely to default. That doesn't mean that it's not going to have to sell a lot of its assets, and a lot of its liabilities have got rather long maturities, so it's not going to have to pay back all that debt in one go. But it is likely to be downgraded to junk. And that is certainly going to swell the quantity of debt that is rated as junk, considering that GE has $120 billion of debt. Ford is another company that is likely to be downgraded. Well, the share price has stabilized somewhat, but I think it probably does bear, or I think it is worth looking at least some of their bonds. So the most liquid bond is the callable bond. I don't think that that's really representative of what we see in the wider market. If we look out to 10 years, then we're seeing that these prices are actually trading above par. Well, what that suggests is that investors are willing to give at least some benefit of the doubt to the company over the course of the next few years. But then you look at the 2043, and that's trading at a substantial discount, but yet it's still only trading at a 6.8% yield. Well, what that tells us is that the market is currently pricing in a lot more risk in GE than it is in Ford. Then it's worth taking a look at Yes Bank, because what this highlights is that it isn't simply in the US credit markets that we're getting some stress coming through. There's obviously been a lot of stress in the Chinese high yield sector, and Yes Bank was down in a dynamic manner again in here today. Well, part of the reason for this is because the CEO has said he never wanted to sell his equities, but what he did do was he put all of his holdings in trust, and then he wrote zero coupon bonds against them and sold those bonds to companies like Reliance Asset Management and Templeton Fund Managers. Well, one of the covenants on those bonds was that the quantity of debt that had been issued would only be as a certain percentage of the equity that they were written against. But the fall in the equity price has now broken the covenants on those zero coupon bonds. Well, that could potentially result in fixed income funds ending up with a substantial plug of equity in Yes Bank. But they're fixed income funds, they're not allowed to hold equity, and therefore they'd probably end up as sellers. Well, When we look at the bonds for Yes Bank, they're all trading within 1 point of par. So that tells us that this is not a credit issue for Yes Bank, but rather it is what could be deemed as a special set of circumstances, or a distressed set of circumstances, and it suggests that the price could potentially go lower from here, but that it's likely to represent a buying opportunity, that this is the kind of distressed environment that you do get when liquidity conditions tighten and it puts people who were highly leveraged under pressure. And that does seem to be the case with one of the founders of the bank. Whereas when we look at the wider banking sector in India, it's been comparatively stable and is actually pushing back above the trend mean in here this week, although it was a little bit weaker in here today. Well, I think what this helps to suggest is that we've certainly seen some pricing disparities coming through, and it's exactly these kinds of pricing disparities that are representative of the latter stages of medium-term corrective phases. Well, and with the Federal Reserve beginning to sound a little bit more dovish, and the potential for at least some news coming through that could potentially be positive from the Trump-Xi meeting over the weekend, well, there is the potential that we're coming towards the end of this corrective phase. Obviously, we're still in very early days, and that conclusion would be subject to major indices pushing back above their trend means. The epicenter of risk does remain in China and in Europe, and that the US has continued to be a relative strength leader over the course of this bull market. So it is the market to keep particular pay attention to for the simple matter that leaders tend to lead in both directions. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.